everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Inference, where we talk about programming languages and other fun stuff. Today, I'm really happy to have, as a first guest for the Inference podcast, Brujo Benivades. Welcome, Brujo. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Michel. Fine. I am just woken up here in Spain, ready for a good show.
Awesome. So I'd like to start by asking you what you're currently doing and how you got there.
All right. So I'm working now as an Erlang developer on Nextrol. Actually, the position is a staff engineer, but the basic job is to maintain large Erlang systems. I got here because many years ago I started working as an Erlang developer after the university, where I was a Haskell developer. I did my thesis in Haskell, and since there was a need for an Erlang developer in a company that was building telecommunication systems in Buenos Aires, Argentina, where I'm from, I joined basically to learn the language, and I got in love with the language and the community and everything. And so I started working in Erlang since then, and that got me here. Basically, I work on the telecommunication systems. Then I joined a company called Inaka in Buenos Aires, founded by a Seattle folk called Chad Depew. And eventually the company got acquired by Erlang Solutions. So I also became an Erlang trainer, and I traveled through different places in the world teaching Erlang. And after Inaka was dissolved, I joined Nextrol, and I also joined the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation as a member of the Education Working Group.
Okay, that's awesome. I see actually that you're also really active in the open source community and making training on different websites, and also being a trainer of the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation. And why did you start being an open sourcer and a trainer? What did you find in the Erlang community that made you want to start doing that?
Yeah, I think the key point here is that we are but a few. Like we're the Erlang community is not a large community. So every contribution is valuable. And when we started working at the Inaka, that was, I think, 2010, if I remember correctly, we knew that we were not going to make it like on our own. We needed help from others. And so we started using open source tools. And since we were using tools from the open source community, it was our responsibility to contribute back. So everything we built and was worth sharing, we shared. And we also used that platform to train new people, because in Buenos Aires there were like 3-4 Erlang developers. Okay. And so we needed more. We needed to grow the community, so we needed to train some other people. So we offered that possibility. There is a talk by Iñaki Garay on one of the Erlang factories in San Francisco where he explains the whole thing. But basically, we took in anybody that wanted to learn Erlang, as long as they were willing to learn and they had this passion for programming. They could join the company. They didn't need to have an experience on the language, but then we had to train them. And so to train them, we make them create some project, and some of those projects, basically all of those projects were open source, but some of them were actual tools that the people can use. Some others were games or whatever, but one of our most famous tools was Elvis. And Elvis was the project that Juan Facorro used to learn Erlang. And now it's the official linter of the Erlang community. So,
wow. Okay, that's awesome. Moving a bit to the programming language itself. When we first met, we wrote something. We were chatting about, the Erlang community in general. And you told me that Erlang is much more than a functional programming language. What do you mean by that?
So in syntax, you can learn Erlang in multiple levels, right? And on the basics of like just writing a function and whatnot, Erlang is a functional language. There's no doubt about it. But the main attractive of the language is not that one. Is that it's virtual machine is built to allow you to write concurrent systems easily, distributed systems easily, and to have a fault tolerance built in, and observability and many other things that in other languages you have to recreate.
So,
I think Robert Berding, one of the authors of the language, said there is like the rule of Berding that says that every other language, when they try to do concurrency and whatnot, they have a bug rhythm faulty implementation of the Erlang VM inside them, right? Because these people, the creators of Erlang, worked on the opposite direction. First, they made the language distributed, concurrent, fault tolerant, etc. It turned out to be functional.
Yeah.
Because it was the easiest way, or because they had the experience on this, but that's not the key part. The important pieces are the others.
Yeah, I remember the book Programming Erlang from Joe Armstrong, mm-hmm. when he say that he didn't want to create a functional language, but in order to achieve high concurrency and all the features that Erlang today have, it needed to be a functional language. So being functional in that case can be considered as a side effect, let me say, of the runtime and the language. Yeah. And I'd like to ask you, you told me actually that you used to write Haskell,
mm-hmm.
and then moved to Erlang. I would like to ask you, what did you find in Erlang that you couldn't find in Haskell? Because functional languages such as OCaml, Haskell, and other languages are good for creating distributed systems, concurrent systems, because of their nature. But yeah, Erlang has something more, I guess. So what did you find in Erlang that you couldn't find in Haskell?
For one thing, I find a lot more simplicity. There were many things that were already solved before I came in. I am not by any means a distributed programming expert, like certainly I'm not, but I don't need to be, and that's amazing. In other languages,
okay.
I need to know what's going on behind the scenes and whatnot. Over here, I just boot up two nodes, put the same cookie, they are connected, done. I don't need to care about how to do all those things because they are done by the virtual machine or OTP. And another thing that it's not something that it is in Erlang, it's quite the contrary. I like languages that are not typed, not strongly typed.
Okay.
And it was a pain, like working with Haskell, my main, I had two but things that I disliked about Haskell in particular, and one of them was that I had to specify the types on every new thing I created. In Erlang, it was far easier. And on the other hand, which is associated a little bit, is monads and all those things in Haskell. I thought I had learned those things like for five times. Every time I thought I had the concept strong in my head, I figured out I didn't know, and I had to learn again and so on.
Yeah, I feel you.
And
yeah.
And that didn't happen with Erlang. Erlang is simple in that regard. So sometimes years after using a thing and having it working in production, I if I really want to know what's going on, I can dig deep and see. But I don't need to at the beginning. I can just write the code and it works.
Okay. I would like to ask you in few words, if you can define what the OTP is for all those listeners who don't know what Erlang is.
Yeah. So Erlang is a language. Erlang as a language comes with a very limited set of tools. I think it has the basic component blocks, the connectivity between nodes, and basically that's it. And maybe the port to open programs outside of your virtual machine, stuff like that, very basic stuff. If you want to build systems, like complex systems, you need tools, more powerful tools on top of that. And they quickly realized that Erlang was developed in Ericsson more than 30 years ago, and they immediately realized that they had shared tools among teams. For instance, all those teams in Ericsson required some sort of server that receives messages and does stuff and returns a value, like an RPC or whatever.
Yeah.
And since they were all working on this kind of same thing, they abstracted the generic parts to a module that they call Gen Server, generic server. And just like that, and with many other things, they put all those things together. Originally only meant for telecommunications applications. That's why it is the Open Telecom Platform, OTP. But eventually they realized that those things were generic enough for anybody to use. So it's like the standard library of Erlang now. And basically nobody creates systems. You can create toy applications, but real systems, nobody creates real systems without using OTP and its principles and whatnot.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you for the explanation. And one other thing that I'd like to ask you is, we have Java on one hand being an enterprise programming language and runtime and, you know, virtual machine. And we have Erlang on the other hand, which is gaining popularity during the last years. Why do you think that Erlang needed more time to gain such popularity when compared to other programming languages and runtimes such as Java or Node.js or Golang, which is, of course, a competitor, let's say, of Erlang in the concurrent world?
I think one of the things is that, originally at least, is that Erlang solved a very specific problem. Like, it works great for large distributed systems, and there were not too many of them until we started having massive web services. So, as I said, it was not 15 years ago, like half the life of Erlang, when I started working on Erlang, and still by that time, the main purpose of Erlang was to build telecommunications related systems.
Okay, so it wasn't a general purpose.
Exactly.
Runtime.
Exactly.
Okay.
Java solved whatever you want, and Erlang solved very well some particular problem, but the popularity, the Erlang becoming open source, and then somebody realizing that they could, in the same way that telecommunication platform works, they could make web servers work, and they created an open source framework for web services on Erlang, and that made it easier to expand to other similar related problems, but still more popular than the original one. And then the other thing that happened was Elixir, like another version, another way of writing code for the same virtual machine, which is more approachable, and when Elixir was created, they already have learned 20 years to learn from the mistakes of Erlang, or the details or whatever, and so they started from a very much more solid ground and much more approachable, as I said, position, so it could attract other people that doesn't have to relearn a whole thing to jump from a different language to this platform. So I think now it's easier. Now it's Erlang is closer in terms of what you can do and the amount of things you need to learn before starting with it.
Yeah.
Still not there, but far closer than it was a couple of years ago.
Okay, awesome. So how do you think that the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation can help people, learning more about Erlang and Elixir and other BEAM dialects?
Yeah, so in the group that I'm part of, the let's say that the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation have multiple groups. So there is an infra group that creates tools for maintaining infrastructure. There is a marketing group that tries to get the language out and into the public. There is a recruiting group, etc. And there is an education group where I am part of. Our mission is to teach people that wants to learn, or find people that wants to learn Erlang and teach them the language in the most amicable way possible, and generally for free. So before the pandemic, our goal was to join meetups and communities and go talk about it, give free workshops for people to start learning and whatnot. And that came to a halt. And so we switched gears and we provided an online training course given by, I think, at least my favorite Erlang teacher, which is Simon Thompson from the University of Kent. And then the other thing that we do is we participate in communities like Exercism and Pluralsight and some other places where we act as mentors. The members of the education group, we go there and mentor people. I personally have mentored around 10 exercises per week since the last 6 months. Every week 10 exercises.
Oh wow!
And that's a way to let people know that if they want to learn Erlang, they are not alone. I think one of the main issues, at least in my experience, for people who want to learn this language is the size of the community, which is terribly small, but it's not large. So it may happen that you go to Stack Overflow, you post a question, and you have to wait a day or two to get an answer, which is something that doesn't happen with other communities. So the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation gives us the chance, say my company contributes part of my working day time to the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation. So I am allowed and expected to help people teaching them, say through Exercism or other places like Stack Overflow or whatever. And so we can help people feel that there is somebody who can help you here if you want to learn. And the other thing that we focus on is bringing all the languages in the ecosystem together, because by this time we have about 10 or 12 different ways of writing code for the Erlang virtual machine, some more popular than others. Erlang, of course, the original one, Elixir, but we also have LFAE. We have Caramel, which is OCaml for the...
Yeah, I will have the Caramel programming language author in this series later on. So we will talk more about that. Yeah,
I know. And just like him, there are others that have the same situation where they wanted some features that they found in other languages, but they want the virtual machine of Erlang, so they ported or they created new languages with a mixture of those things. And if the Erlang community is small, you can imagine how small it is, the community of any of those languages.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And so we don't want them to lose, we want them to be able to maintain their language, and so we try to help them by joining all communities and gathering help everybody from each other, and so far it's working, I would say. And finally, we also contribute to people trying to learn Erlang with money. We provide grants for people to say join conferences, even international, like traveling. Some people travel from I think it was Africa to some Ireland or somewhere or Italy, I think, from somewhere in Africa to Italy last year before the pandemic.
Sure.
And but if not, we pay, we we do some arrangements with the companies behind the conferences, so they can provide exclusive reduced prices or even free tickets.
Oh, okay.
And so every conference that is there that is related to Erlang, Elixir, or whatever other language in the ecosystem, we always try to get some people that wants to try to learn the language into the workshops. If they can't because they don't have the resources for it, we pay for it.
Okay, that's awesome. And yeah, that brings me to another question. Why do you think that people are willing to learn Erlang, and why do you think that people should learn Erlang?
Sometimes, or the folks that I know online, or in my experience, I would say, because there is a wide variety of versions, but the ones that I found are one of two kinds. Either they want some, they figure out that their company needs a language that can ensure high levels of concurrency or fault tolerance, and they are struggling to implement their solutions in other languages. So somebody tells them, yeah, no, you know, WhatsApp is built in Erlang. And so, we need Erlang then. Let's move everything to Erlang. And then they figure out that they have to learn a new way of thinking. And those things happen. And luckily, they happen quite often, because when I was a trainer at Erlang Solutions, that was my key business, income.
Okay.
But on the other hand, there are folks that are just curious, and some people that it's learning multiple languages just because they want it. Others, they saw somebody gives them a pointer to Erlang or Elixir in the university. In the education group, we have multiple folks that work at the universities, like the University of Kent or the University of La Coruña in Galicia, etc. And so even if they don't give a full training on Erlang, when they talk about distributed systems, they give the students a pointer like, and this is easier solved in Erlang because it was designed in this way, blah, blah. And so some of the students are actually interested, and they try to learn these things. And there is also the component of, which is a mixed thing, but some Erlang jobs are really high paying. Like they pay quite a lot for an Erlang developer. You have to, it's probably in the needs of an experienced Erlang developer, which is the hard part, but they are well paying. So those are other motivations too. And why do I need? What do I think the people should learn Erlang? I think if you are able, one of the best things that can happen to you as a developer is that the folks that need your service lets you choose the language. And if you can do that, and if you can choose the tools to do your job, it's good to know that you have alternatives to focus on different things, right? It's good to know that you have a tool that if you need a distributed service or a very scalable service or a very critical service where you need fault tolerance, you have a tool that you can use, and you can just implement the things that you need and don't focus so much on all those other external requirements. Things that in other languages you might need to implement on your own or find somebody who implemented it before. And it's also fun. I like the language. I like it, period. But I think it's a good way to, if you're always worked on the similar kinds of languages, it's good to be exposed to something that is far different from that, just to see that not everything is there is no just one solution for the same thing.
Okay, I would like to ask you two more questions. The first one is, how do you think that Erlang has influenced other programming languages? I mean, I'm thinking about distributed systems, of course, but also about actor model. If we think of Scala and Akka framework, of course, it reminds me a lot of Erlang. So how do you think that Erlang has influenced other languages?
I think many of the things that came into Erlang by accident or as a collateral, as we said, like the functional programming part or the or message passing or whatever, they just built the tools that they needed to solve the issue, ended up being extremely practical. And so people, when started working with this and find it useful, and then they moved to some other languages, they missed those things. And so they try to copy it or to be inspired by them. And I've seen a couple of things, like the distribution protocols, or maybe the fact that we have generic pieces for typical components like servers or event machines or whatnot, the actor model, which is part of it. And lately, like I think yesterday or a couple of days ago, I saw that Python now will have some Erlang style pattern matching, which is
didn't know that. That's awesome.
Which is structural pattern matching is something that's really cool, and it's not often seen. Like I've seen in the last couple of years a move to the inclusion of pattern matchings in languages, but none of them to the extent of Erlang pattern matching, which is super powerful. And I think many people that loves Erlang because of this, because it's super, super easy to write a code that extracts tens of values from one single binary, and you can just work with it. And instead of, you know, calling a function every time, parsing the numbers, traversing the thing, and it's also, since it's simpler, it's less surface for bugs. So
yeah, sure. Okay, you answered my question very, very well. Thank you. And one last question, and then we'll go to the conclusion. Is there something that you'd like to change about Erlang or the Erlang ecosystem in general?
As a developer of tools for developers, like I built a couple of tools over the years for and maintain tools for developers, the progress for getting things that everybody wants to use into the official packages of the system is extremely slow. Like we used a tool called Rebar for package building and releasing and many other things. They're like the manager of projects, right? And that thing was the de facto tool for 6 years, 7 years before it was actually adopted by the official, by the OTP team as the official tool. And that led to some other projects that were competing solutions, and they eventually got discarded or just forgotten. And that's not a terrible thing, but it's also a waste of time for for the developers of these other solutions, but also for people like myself who used one of those solutions until the other one was made official, and so I had to move everything to that one. And so currently the OTP and the Erlang distribution comes with their GitHub organizations, not the distribution. In their GitHub organization, they support Rebar 3, which is the package builder and manager, and a couple of other tools, but they are but a few. And I maintain the linter. I maintain one tool that is a code cleaner that we developed a couple of weeks ago, and a formatter, but it also there are multiple formatters, and eventually one of them will be picked as the official formatter, probably not mine, and then I will have to change to everything to that one because my formatter will become obsolete, and like that. And it takes months or even years for the OTP team to officialize the choice, and those years are wasted time for other developers.
Okay, got it. And yeah, going into the conclusion for this episode, what are your thoughts about the future of Erlang?
I think the future of Erlang will be in the hands of Elixir mostly. I think more and more people are figuring out that that's an easier way of managing their systems and creating them. Some things are still are even better to be built in Erlang because of whatever pattern matching clarity or whatever. But the easier path of learning Elixir is unquestionable. It's far, far easier to learn Elixir from start. Eventually, every Elixir developer ends up learning Erlang because they eventually need to know what's going on, but they can start working on Elixir quicker than Erlang. And so I think that's the path to go. I am not, since I usually work in Erlang on my everyday routine and I have a lot of experience in Erlang, I am not moving to Elixir anytime soon, like for good, but it might happen to me as well, and I don't mind. And I think there is a clear path on that way. On the other hand, Erlang will always be the language for huge services like WhatsApp, Kazoo, Jabberdee, RabbitMQ, whatever. And those will be around for ages. So there will be work there to maintain those things and build things around it that should be built in Erlang. And again, that market is of high value. So if you work there, you get recognition and also a lot of money, and but small Erlang projects are generally not found anymore, and they are usually now small Elixir projects or small closure projects or whatever.
Oh yeah, and so would you recommend a user that wants to learn something that runs on the Beam? Would you recommend them to start by learning Elixir or Erlang, or what do you think? Where one person should start?
If you come from, which is rare but can happen, if you come from a functional background like Haskell or maybe OCaml or whatever the other languages, it might be easier to start learning Erlang because you will find a familiar environment, albeit with a strange syntax, but not. Nothing that you can not tackle in a couple of days, and then you can build your way up into other things. You can learn the complex things better in Erlang than you will do in Elixir. But if you're not familiar with that environment, maybe that is a very high step to be the first step. So it's much easier to start by building something with Elixir, which is easier. And then you learn to understand what you did, but you have something to work on far easier much more easily in Elixir. So in general, if you know nothing about this, probably Elixir. But if you come from a functional background, it's most likely that Erlang will be more understandable and manageable, and you will be learning that easily.
Okay, I thought that Elixir was better for people coming from a functional background, but maybe it's just my bias because I tried to learn Erlang many times and I found Elixir more comfortable, but maybe it's also because I come from Ruby. I started to work with the PHP and Ruby. So yeah, for sure that helped me a lot with Elixir.
Yeah, to me, the main blocker like on that front was that I was expecting everything to be, you know, explicit and visible and whatnot, and Elixir hide a lot of things from me, say through macros or the use whatever directive or etc. And so to me it was, I learned Erlang before, so it's not point of comparison. But when I jumped from Haskell to Erlang, it was just okay. This is the new syntax. Done.
Okay, yeah, I got it. And One last thing, because I know that many people will ask this. I'm sorry, I began to say one last thing 5 questions ago, but this is really interesting. So I'd like to ask you one last thing for sure. Can you describe in just few words the Let It Crash philosophy?
Yeah. So basically the idea is that systems will fail. You know that they will fail. You can handle the case where you know the expected error, and of course you can write code to manage that, that's fine. But eventually they will fail. You cannot tackle every single possibility. And so the philosophy of Erlang is that you can isolate that problematic component to the minimum part, kill it, restart it from a known point, and keep working. So the idea behind that, behind the implementation of that philosophy in Erlang, is processes. So in Erlang, everything happens in a contained process, and if that process crashes, it's restarted by a supervisor, and the error can be logged and whatnot, but then you have that the system keeps working. So nothing halts your whole environment. Everything that crashes in a little thing, and therefore you can worry less about handling every single possible error, and just handle the ones that you know, and the ones that you don't know, just let them crash and restart, and you can keep working on that.
Okay.
There is an amazing article written by one of the best bloggers, writers of the Erlang community, which is Fred Ebert, sorry. And and it's called The Zen of Erlang, and I recommend you to read that very much.
Okay, thank you. So I think that was all for today. Thank you so much, Brujo, for your commitment to the community, for the work you're doing on Exercism and Erlang Ecosystem Foundation, and during SpawnFest and other events that you are organizing. So I will link all those festivals and events in the description of the video you're currently watching. And thank you so much. I really hope to have you here for another episode, maybe in the next season. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And see you next
thank
time.
You. Good luck.
Thank you.
I think your podcast will be great. So I will keep will subscribe and
yeah
and keep watching
thank
this. Thank you.
Thank you.